This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Western and Southern Financial Group. Put our financial strength behind you. It's easy to get started. Visit WesternSouthern.com.
Now batting number one in our hearts. At least he'd like to think so. It's the Jim Day Podcast.
Hi again, welcome to the Jim Day Podcast. Hope you're doing well out there wherever you are listening. And once again, we're going to go back in time here in Reds lore, and we're gonna make this podcast a little tougher, a little grittier today, because we welcome in... Well, they call him Ronnie O, Cincinnati's own Ron Oster, Reds Hall of Famer, Ron Oster. Ronnie O, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Jim. Real good. I just enjoying the grandkids and doing some stuff around the house, working at Belterra Park and just having a good time.
Well, that's where I wanted to start of where, you know, what's going on nowadays. So grandkids, eh? What's that experience like?
No, there's nothing like it, I'll tell you. I have eight of them now, and the first one was a girl, and the last seven were boys. And the oldest is 10, the youngest is one, and I'll take 10 more. You know, the good thing about that is you can spoil the heck out of them and give them back. You know, you can get rid of them, but it's great, really. It's the best
world right there.
That's right. I'm trying to figure out how to have grandkids without having kids, though.
I've heard that before, actually, about the grandkids. It's like, great. It's a great experience. You got them. And then you can give them back.
It really is. They're something else.
Do you already have the boys sliding hard into second base?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, you're not going to do that anymore, are you?
No.
You're not allowed to break up a double play. Yeah. You're not allowed to break up a double play anymore. I had somebody ask me a while back, you know, do you want to get back into baseball? I said, well, no. I said, how am I going to tell somebody not to break up a double play? That could win you a game.
You have to be thankful for the era that you did play in. Are you kind of, when you look back, you kind of thankful, wow, you know, because sometimes I was a generation right before the internet came along, and I had to, you know, we had to go out and play, and I'm just thankful that I've kind of got the best of both worlds. Are you kind of thankful that you played in the era you did?
I'm so fortunate to be able to play the years I did. You know, I never played for money. I mean, I love the game. Yeah, I played for money. You got to make money, have money to make a living. But, and I don't care what they make now. I don't care if they make $1 billion a year. Just play the game the way it's supposed to be played. Give everything you got, 100% every out, every inning, every pitch. You owe it to your fans. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to your teammates. I was so fortunate to come up when I did because, I tell you, a story about when I did come up with Johnny Bench, Pete Rose, Joe Morgan, and Tony Perez were all sitting at their locker. They're sitting at their locker, and I'm sitting by George Foster over locker George Foster, and it's probably 10 feet from their locker and where they were sitting. And I hear my name come up, and I look over, and I didn't say anything, and my name comes up again. And I look over, I go, yeah, and they didn't answer, you know. So it comes up again, and the Oster. And I go, yeah, you know, you guys want something? You want me? And Johnny Bench says, shut the up, rookie. He said, when we want to talk to you, we'll let you know. And oh, my God. And, you know, when I came up, you didn't say a word. You were seen but not heard and everything. And they started laughing and stuff, and they set me up and things. But, you know, that's the way it was back then. People ask me if I miss playing. And I know I can't play anymore, but what I miss the most is being in the clubhouse and getting on the guys and the atmosphere in there, just, you know, jabbing each other and getting on each other. That's what I miss the most. But my era was, I came up in a great organization, Cincinnati, and they taught you the fundamentals, and I learned the fundamentals in Little League because they had some great Little League around here. But they taught you how to play the game the right way, which I believe is the right way. And I wouldn't trade it for anything. Like I said, I you play for money because that's my living and everything. But it's not working. it beats working. You're playing a game, it's so much different now. And they don't, like I say, I don't know if I've seen a hit and run this year, and I don't follow it as much as I used to, because it's frustrating to me just watching the swing. Watch the shifts. The best way to beat a shift is to slap the ball over the other side or bunt down there, and then get them out of the shift. But I could go on and on. It's just frustrating. But I am so lucky and so fortunate to come up, not only when I did, but playing in my hometown in Cincinnati. I'm one of the luckiest guys in the world.
Yeah, there's not many guys that played for one organization the whole time, let alone your hometown team. I mean, you and Barry Larkin have that in common. But what was it like to grow up in this town, Withrow High School, and then you play your entire career with the Reds, and, oh, by the way, they put you into the Reds Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I mean, that was very unexpected. I mean, that was something else. But, it was great playing in Cincinnati, being from Cincinnati when you're doing well. But when you're not doing well, I think you hear it a little bit more, which is understandable. But it did. I mean, I don't have words to describe the feeling. Since I was as old as I can remember, I wanted to play in the big leagues. I wanted to play baseball for a living, and to be able to play in my hometown, it was just. Like I said, I'm spoiled. I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I don't know how to describe, the life that I had in baseball. Everything I own came through baseball, I'm fortunate, very, very fortunate and very thankful.
You mentioned, Bench, Rose, Morgan. I mean, how about, did you ever have a moment? I mean, obviously you're from this town and you were a young man, or not even a man yet, when the Big Red Machine was in its heyday. Did you ever have a moment like, wow, I can't believe I'm in the clubhouse with these guys?
Well, Jim, I was in awe. I mean, I remember going down and working out during the winter. Jack Billingham was down there, Gary Nolan at the time. And there was a few of us in the clubhouse working out. I didn't say a word. I was quiet as a mouse and working out with those guys. And then my first spring training, I was probably more nervous then than I was when the opening day, my first day I started. I used to pretend throwing the ball against the wall, which I did every day. We get into that too, but this pitch count, and I know I'm jumping around, but this pitch count drives me crazy because every day I threw a ball against the wall every single day. The only way to strengthen your arm is the throw, and your arm will tell you when it's tired or whatever. Anyway, where were we? We're talking about growing up in Cincinnati. I used to pretend throwing against the wall. I was these guys. I was Tony Perez. I was Johnny Bench. I had an all-star team, and I used to just pretend I was those guys, and then getting there and being around them, Joe Morgan and those guys. It's just I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. It took me a while to get used to, hey, I'm here. This is crazy. But what a life I've had. That's all I got to say.
It's a beauty. Now, when they talk about you, they talk about tough and gritty and the leadership behind the scenes. Were you always a tough-nosed player?
Yeah, I mean, I watched Pete Rose play. He was my idol growing up. I tried to play the game the way he did. The only thing I didn't do that he did is sprint down the first base when I walked. But I tried, it's all about giving out, giving everything you got, every out, every inning, every pitch. And I tried to hustle like Pete Rose, which, it takes no talent at all to hustle.
Yeah.
And you owe it to everybody to give 100% every minute you're out there. And I watched Pete and the way he played, and I tried to emulate him and play the game the way it's supposed to be played, like him. And I don't know. I'm just myself. I don't think I'm that tough. I like to win. I love to win, and that's why you play to win. I play for a World Series ring. And if I had to jump on a couple guys in the clubhouse or get on them a little bit, and I'd do it. I thought I knew what it took to win. And if somebody's not hustling out there, if somebody's not giving everything they should, then, I'm going to let them know. And I think we can call it a leader or whatever. I don't know. I just love to play the game, and I played it the way I played it. And if my teammates, I love my teammates, and I think they like me. But if they didn't like something I said, it's funny. I was listening. I listened to your podcast with Greg Vaughn, and I'll tell you what. You talk about a leader. That guy was a leader. He'd go out there and I remember. I'll tell you a story about him when I was coaching with the Reds with Greg. Greg,
please
was on
do.
Brett Tomko just pitched, started the game. He gave up, I don't know, 5-6 runs or whatever. They took him out in, I think, the second or third inning or whatever. And we were down 5-6-0. Well, we came back and won the game. And Greg Vaughn comes in the clubhouse, and we're all, celebrating. We won the game, and he noticed the Brett Tomko. He was going to go over and probably – I don't know what he was going to do. I guess he was going to go over and talk to him, and say, hey, hang in there, get him back. But he wasn't in the clubhouse. He was back in the training room. And he was moping. He was because of his outing. Vaughn, I'll never forget that Vaughn went into the training room, told him, get the hell out here. He said, Brett, get out here. He said, we just won a damn game. I mean, I can't say exactly what he said, but we just won a game. Get out here. It's not about you. It's about, it's about the team. And that's just one example of Vaughn. He went out there. People don't realize how hurt he was, how his knees were going out there and giving. John McNamara said, you're not going to feel 100% every day. You very seldom feel 100%. He said, but give 100% of how you feel. And that's what Vaughn did. That's what I tried to do. You feel 80%, give 100% of that 80%. And I'll never forget. He went in and got Tomko came out, and, it made Tomko a better person, better player, better teammate. But that was Greg Vaughn. That's just one story. I mean, I listened to that podcast, and I didn't get to listen to the whole thing yet, but what a leader. You talk about a leader. Greg Vaughn was a leader, and we missed him the next year. That was the year that we came within one game. We had that one extra game with the Mets and lost that game with the Mets to get in the playoffs.
Yeah, that was a heartbreaker, 99, man.
And I use that coaching sometimes. I say, hey, if I see somebody, this could be the game. This could be the game that gets us to the playoffs, because I was through it. But I miss Vaughn, and I got another story about Vaughn. When I was coaching, we're in Atlanta, and I'm hitting ground balls to the third baseman, and Vaughn was struggling. He was hitting, I don't know what he was hitting. He wasn't hitting 200, I don't think. But he came up to me, and he comes up to me and goes, hey, man, I'm going home. And I said, what? I said, you're what? He goes, I'm going home, man. I'm not having any fun. And I said, go ahead. I said, how can you not have fun? You're playing baseball. I said, yeah, you're struggling, but how can you even think about going home, Vaughn? I said, I don't want to talk about it. Get away from me. Well, anyway, it went a little deeper than that, the conversation. So anyway, we're done taking batting practice. That was during batting practice. So we're done taking batting practice, and I'm walking over to get the balls to hit infield. We took infield back in the days. I'm walking over to get the balls to the infield, and Vonnie's walking towards me. I go, oh, my God, here we go. He didn't like that. He's ticked off. He comes up to me. He goes, you know what? And I go, you know what? He goes, you're right. He says, thank you. He says, you're right. You're exactly right. He says, if I'm not having fun, it's my fault. He says, I saw him. I didn't see him after that, after I coached with him that year. And I hadn't seen Vaughn in years, 3 or 4 years. I saw him about 4 years later, and he was, he made it a point to come up to me and talk to me. And he's one of my favorite guys I ever coached. I'll just put it that way.
Oh, I bet. I mean, when you were a leader yourself, and then he's a leader, and you're a coach trying to lead, I could see that where you would naturally just like that guy.
Yeah, he gets. I tell you, all Bonnie wanted to do was win. He didn't care about his statistics and that. That he, whatever he could do to make the team better, to win a game, he would go out there. And like I said, his knees. I mean, it hurt me just watching him walk around the clubhouse, getting ice on his knees to try to play that day. And he would. And one of my favorite guys I ever coached.
Oh, I bet. There's no doubt about it. Now, you talked about saying things to teammates that they might not have liked. That led to a few skirmishes, did it not?
With me?
Yeah.
yeah, a couple. Okay, yeah, I got a couple. But, you know, I got my point across, and I'll share one of them with you. Barry Larkin, Rob Dibble was pitching, and we're playing Houston, and for no reason at all, and I love Dibbs. For no reason at all, Rob Dibble hit Eric Yelding. Well, Larkin comes up. You know, Yelding was a shortstop. Larkin comes up the next inning, and they hit Larkin in the wrist. And Larkin's hurt, and it's September, and this is 1990. This is when I'm going to get my World Series ring. I'm hoping I'm going to get my World Series ring. They hit him in the wrist, and Larkin comes out of the game. Goes up to the clubhouse to get his wrist taken care of. Well, I walk up the clubhouse and I get in there, and then I see Rob Dibble and Randy Myers down the other end of the clubhouse. This is at Great America
Riverfront
State. They're all the way down the other end of the clubhouse, and all I hear Dibble say when I'm walking up there and just turned to get in the clubhouse is, "Man, they're going to blame that on me now," and I lost it. I went down, and I can't say what I'm said to him, but I said, "You dumb," and I went off. I walked all the way down there. I go, you don't think it's your fault, Dibs? I said, "You hit their shortstop. They hit Mark." And I said, "If we don't have him, we don't have a chance of, winning the World Series, or we don't have a chance of getting in the playoffs." And I just went off. Randy Myers standing there talking to me. He says, "We don't want to hear it right now." And that's not wasn't a good thing to say to me at the time.
Oh, no.
So let me tell you something. You're going to hear it. And I said, "Yeah, you guys are nasty out there." I said, "Let's see how nasty you are in here to Randy Myers." And he didn't do anything. He turned around and walked away. But I got my point across. And in fact, Dibs, you talked to him today. He thanks me for doing it. Dibs didn't know. He didn't come up with the guys that I did, Benches, Roses, Perez's, yeah. Morgan's. He didn't know, but I guess it worked. I lost it. Yeah, I lost it.
If they're coming up to you later and thanking you, multiple players, you got your point across.
Exactly. And, and I'm not, as you know, Jim, I'm not very politically correct. I've gotten better.
I've noticed over the years.
Yeah, I've gotten better, but I'm not very, I get my point across. And like I say, I just wanted to win. You don't have to like me, or it's like you don't have to like your manager, you don't have to like your coach, or whatever. And I could go on, but this is great talking to you. But Russ Nixon turned my career around. I was in my first full year playing. Russ was my manager in Tampa, and I was 18 years old, and I made two errors in an inning. And after the inning, I'm coming back in the clubhouse or in the dugout with my head down. Russ, and this is an honest true story, and then I'll tell you one about him after that, but how he turned my career around. But Russ cared. He grabs me. He puts me up against the dugout wall and goes, "Did you try to make those two errors?" I go, "No." He says, "I know that." He says, "Don't ever come in here with your head down feeling sorry for yourself. I don't care if you make five errors in the inning. As long as you're trying and you're giving 100%, that's good enough for me." That's that story. Now, 2 weeks or about 3 weeks later, we're going to Winter Haven and playing a game in Winter Haven. We're up by 3-2 in the bottom of the ninth, and man on second, two outs, and a ground ball is hit to me at shortstop, and come up, hit off my leg, and went out the field. Well, we ended up losing the game. So we all get back on the bus. It's about a 45-minute bus trip, and the bus is heading back, and the bus pulls off the road and stops in this pony keg. he goes, and Russ gets out and comes back on the bus with a big, like a huge grocery bag. He says, here, hell with the, get them tomorrow. He says, here, everybody have a beer. He said, and give Oster a six pack, and brought me back, and brought me back a six pack and handed it to me. And back then, you know, I was 18 years old, but they had the 3-2 beer and you're allowed to drink that. But this is a guy, and that's why I jump guys. You know, whether I coach in here, my son in basketball, Bobby Knight is one of my favorite coaches because Russ wouldn't have said two words to me if he didn't care about me.
Right.
You know, he just let me go. That guy, And that's why I think these are my opinions, whether I'm right or wrong. I'm wrong a lot, but those are the guys that care about you. Jump your when you're not doing the things you're supposed to, or not giving everything you got. And I did it to my son in basketball. I did it to our teams in basketball, and I'm trying to make them as good as they can be. And if they take it the wrong way, and I know you're not allowed to coach like that now, and that's why I'm not in baseball or not coaching, because that's taboo these days. You get in a lot of trouble probably doing that, or get fired or whatever. But those are the guys that people don't understand care about you, guys that get on you. My dad was hard on me, but he did it to try to make me the man or the player that I am. And I truly believe that's and I'll do that to the day I die. You know, if I didn't care about you, I'd leave you alone. Go do your thing. You know, but Russ cared about me enough to do that and give me the lesson that he knew that I was trying. And that's what I tell everybody I coach, or my grandson and kids and things. You know, as long as you're out there and you give 100%, you give everything you got, you try every inning, every out, every pitch out there, no one can say anything about you. You can't, you know, if they do, so what? You're giving everything you got. You're going to make errors. You're going to strike out. But as long as you're trying, as long as you're not lackadaisical, as long as you're not going through the motions, you know, no one can fault you.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, Russ Nixon turned my career around by grabbing me and putting me up against the dugout wall and saying that.
Well, I did not know that Russ Nixon had that effect on you. But there's the one thing you can't control in the game or anything is your effort level. I mean, that is the one thing that you yourself can't control. Exactly. Is your effort level and the amount of care that you put into something. Hey, I want to ask you about the you didn't wear batting gloves, which was a little more back then. It's very rare nowadays. But teammates would describe your hands, deep wounds on your hands. They even mentioned blisters. Was it blisters? Was it calluses? No. I mean, how bad did your hands get?
I mean, I think it's exaggerated. I know Dave Collins, you know, talks a lot about, you know, but, you know, they were sore. They get sore, but no, they weren't
calloused up.
They were calluses, and maybe they crack and bleed a little bit or whatever, but it's not like I was going out there. You know, if they hurt that bad, I'd pan them up and stuff. But I didn't wear batting gloves because I like the feel of the bat. I like the pine tar. I like to use a lot of pine tar and rosin, and I like the feel of the wood bat. And batting gloves, to me, it just felt like something slowing my hands down. You know, like I don't know, you got boxing gloves on you, where it just weighs you down a little bit. I just like the feel of the bat, and I did put them on. I got some baseball cards with batting gloves on, but I put them on to run the bases.
Yeah.
I never, you know, so because I slid head first like Pete, and I didn't want to scratch my hands up any more than they already were. But no, that's exactly. I might have. Everybody gets blisters hitting, probably even with batting gloves on.
But oh yeah,
that was exactly.
Especially early on in camp.
What's that?
Especially early on in camp when.
Right. Yeah, but no, I just didn't. I just like to feel the bat.
Ronnie O, love me some Ron Oster, and I hope you're enjoying the conversation. We'll get back to it after this message from our sponsor, Western and Southern Financial Group.
Life is full of questions, like when should I start thinking about life insurance? But however difficult these questions may be, Western and Southern can help you answer them. Backed by over 130 years of experience, together, we can look ahead to leave the unknown behind. Western and Southern Financial Group, life insurance, retirement, and investments.
Products issued by member companies of Western Southern Financial Group, Cincinnati, Ohio.
You, 1987, Mookie Wilson slid into you, tore your ACL. And were you not the same player afterwards? I mean, that the medical, you know, these surgeries have come so much farther now than 1987. Did that really have a negative turn on your career? Was it hard to come back?
Well, yeah, it took me a year to come back. And, and you know, when you have an injury like that, you know, like everybody's going to be judging Joe Burrows now and things, you know, as a player. And then I think once that gets started, the rumors get started. I don't think, you know, I probably wasn't 100% of how I was, you know, before it happened. No, I had to wear that brace for I don't know how long. And then they taped it and, you know, wanted to tape it. And finally I just said, I don't want this thing taped, because I think it hampers you moving, especially the big leg brace and things. And, you know, I don't think I might have lost a quarter of a step or a half a step, or wasn't as quick, you know, at first going after ball. I don't know. I don't know. And, you know, I've heard rumors and things. I was sort of lost a little bit. And maybe I did. I don't know. But it took a while to come back, and I could have played longer. I mean, I got my World Series ring and shut it down. And the reason I did that is the Reds had an option for my contract the next year. They didn't pick up my option, but they still wanted to sign me. And then I said, hey, you got a contract? You know, I got my World Series ring. I'm a utility player now. It 1990 was the most fun I've ever had in baseball. And I didn't play every day. You know, I was a utility player. But because we won the World Series, it was the most fun I've ever had. But I didn't like sitting on the bench and waiting to play, especially when I knew that I could, you know, I could be out there helping. But then that's why I didn't play after that. But I could have played 3 or 4 more years after my knee, after 1990. And my knee happened in 87. I came back in 88, and I retired in 1990 after I got the World Series ring. But I could play a few more. I had 3 or 4 teams ask me to come out, but I turned down $1 million when I first came back from my knee from the Dodgers. They wanted to sign me for a 2-year contract, and I wanted to stay in Cincinnati. I just couldn't see myself playing for anybody else. I almost went to Chicago, the Cubs, in 1990, because Don Zimmer was the manager there, and he wanted me out there. But they had just signed Mitch Williams, and they didn't have any money to guarantee me. I said, just get, you know, guarantee me $100,000. I'll come out there. And Zim said, they won't do it. And said, but I almost played for Chicago because of Zim, Don Zimmer, because I loved him. I don't know. I don't know. Wow. I know I could have played. I know I had some offers after that and could have played after that.
Well, it's so, you know, you see players nowadays and you get used to them in different uniforms because they move around, free agency, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But back then, I can't imagine you in a Dodgers uniform and certainly not a Cubs uniform.
Not the Dodgers.
People don't realize the rivalry. I mean, not the Dodgers. No.
Oh my God! It was that was the rivalry. Now, like probably like St. Louis is even worse. I didn't go because, you know, number one, you know, I bleed red, not Dodger blue. And number two, yeah, you know, I'm not going to raise a family in Los Angeles. We had young kids and stuff. I'm not moving my family to Los Angeles. I, you know, Cincinnati being the great city it is, I wanted to stay here. You know, and I Chicago, I could see playing in Chicago, Wrigley Field. That was probably one of my favorite ballparks to play in. And
yeah,
Don Zimmer was one of my favorite people in baseball. But
he was a lot of people's favorite in baseball.
Yeah.
1990, you mentioned that it was a fun year and you were a utility player. And I know sitting on the bench had to stink. Mariano Duncan was playing second base. But why was that? When they look back on that team, you're often mentioned for the leadership in the clubhouse. What was it like that year? You say it was fun and I imagine frustrating at the same time, but you guys won. Do you look back, obviously you won a world championship, you got a World Series ring, obviously you look back fondly in that regard, but the overall experience, is, do you look back like, wow, that was a great year?
Yeah. You know what? I think it was one of my best years because, on the field, I almost hit 300, which I didn't play a whole lot, but Jim, I'm a pretty humble guy. And I'm myself though. And whether I was a leader or not, but I will say this, I don't think, in my opinion, I might be wrong, but you have to ask some of my teammates. I don't think we would have done what we did if I wasn't on that team. I've heard that before.
I've heard other players on that team say that.
Well, you never heard me say it because I hate talking about myself. And I am a very humble person. I'm the luckiest guy in the world. But in my heart, I really don't think that we would have gotten as far as we did if I wasn't on that team. And I didn't play every day. Mariano Duncan did a super, super unbelievable job. And, Lou Piniella made all the right moves as far as it almost like he had a crystal ball or whatever. But I think they needed me. I'll put it that way.
There's a story. Tell me if this is right or not, that you guys went through a losing streak. It might have been like 8 games. You shaved your head?
Yeah. We're in Los Angeles, and I believe we're 7 games. We lost 7 games in a row. So we're in the clubhouse, and we just lost our 8th game to Los Angeles. And I believe we were 3.5 games still in first place and playing the Dodgers. We just lost our 7th game in a row. So we were 6. Just lost our 7th game in a row, and the nasty boys I'm saying, hey, you guys, talk about, why don't you guys shave your head, nasty boys? Why don't you guys shave your head? Turn your luck around. I was screwing around. I was just trying to lighten the mood because Lou came in and kicking garbage cans and stuff and slammed the door in his office. And, hey, we're still in first place. We're still 3.5 games in first place. And that's why I said, we're still 3.5 games in first place. I said, we're playing not to lose instead of playing to win. I go, why don't you guys shave your head, dance, but shave, let's do something. And I'll never forget, Rob Dibble says, oh, no, I can't do that. He goes, my wife will kill me. And then his next thing out of his mouth was, if we lose 10 games in a row, I'll shave my head. And that was it. I said, that's how we're thinking. I said, we're not losing 10 games in a row. I said, shave mine. And that's what happened. They did. Eric Davis shaved my head. Eric shaved my head. That's how it all came about.
Well, that's how teams come together, though, stuff like that. And you knew that, right? I mean, you knew that.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I knew what it took to win, and we just weren't the same club the last 7 days. And if about the 5th or 6th game we lost in a row, I could see, hey, we're not playing to win. We're playing, not to lose. We're not being aggressive. We're not doing this and that. So I was just trying to lighten the mood and it's funny because Lou put me in the next day. He put me in the start the next day, and there's Malin's second base, and I first pitch. I was so pumped up. I'm going to drive this run. The first pitch was a ball down, and I rolled over and grounded out to the second baseman, and I was so mad. That's on the video too, the wire-to-wire video where I am so ticked up and my head's shaved and I look like but I did get another chance later on and got up and drove in a run, but I was so mad. I swung at the first pitch and I'm gonna do this, and that's the thing. You gotta stay within yourself. I'm trying to win a game or trying to hit a home run to do this and that, and I'm not staying within myself and doing the things I could do. But I got another chance later on. But yeah, that's in the video where I rolled over, grounded out, and I'm coming in, I'm in the dugout, and I'm ticked off, and my hat's off, and my head's white, and
because used to that curly hair, and everyone wore a little longer, a little thicker back then. Did you have to change hat sizes?
About a half a size. Yep. Back then, though, and that's what happened. It never grew back after that. That's what happened to my head after I shaved it. Never came back. but we did win that game, though. It didn't have anything to do with me as far as, but I think it was.
Well, you never know, man. I mean,
well, it loosened the team up a little bit.
Yeah.
But that's that story.
Well, I love this story, and I believe it to be true. I guess I should have looked officially, but was it your last hit driving in a run in game two of the World Series? Wasn't that your last hit in the bigs?
Yes, it was. Yep, that was my last hit. I think we're down 3-1, or I don't remember the score or anything, but man, a second, Bob Welch was pitching, and now I got to base it up the middle and drove in a run. So that was my last at bat.
I mean, how cool is that? I mean, that was a game two. I think he drove in Joe Oliver, who eventually won the game in 10 innings, five to four, I think. So you needed every run.
Your last hit
in the bigs was an RBI World Series hit that helped win a game and win the World Championship.
Well, it helped, but I'm thinking I got to give Joe a lot of credit because I thought I was going to have to hit a double to get him in. But, luckily I didn't hit it. I hit the ball hard, but not too hard.
I'll be sure to pass that along to Joe.
He knows. I already told him.
Oh, I bet a million times.
But that you talk about the fun of the team. That's the way it was back then. We had a great, great clubhouse. We had a great team. Eight guys. We didn't have a superstar. Barry Larkin was the closest thing to the superstar, and he wasn't a superstar back then. And then Eric Davis was a great player, but he wasn't a superstar. We didn't have any superstar, and we were a team. I mean, it took, we called up people from, the spot start and this and that now and then, or somebody get hurt. It took 30 guys or 30 plus guys to do what we did. It wasn't the starting eight, it was a whole team pitching. We got along great. I mean, like I said, that's what I miss the most, is just getting on each other in the clubhouse, and that's a big part of it. And I don't know if you can do that nowadays. I don't know if they let you do that nowadays. As far as the players might get a little bit mad if you get on them a little bit or what. I don't know, but
they do. Probably not to the extent that you guys did, but they still do, and it's still, everyone still reveres the clubhouse, and they talk about the atmosphere, and it is so different in there. It's a different world. You better walk in there with some thicker skin, or at least know guys are just joking around for camaraderie.
Right.
It's still like that.
Right, right. Well, that's good. That's good to hear, because, I know that they got on me, I got on people, and that was all in fun, though. It was all in fun, and you can't take that things personally, and if you don't have the heart, if you're gonna dish it out, you better be able to take it. But Dave Parker was the best at dishing it out, but he could take it too. But it's kind of like Marty Brenneman. I used to get on. Or hear guys get on Marty. You can't get ahead of Marty. You say something to Marty, and boy, you better be ready, because he's going to give it back.
There is no doubt.
Marty's unbelievable. Marty was unbelievable. Yeah, the thing about Marty is, and I want to talk about Joe real quick too, before, I don't know how much time we got, but Marty would say things on the air, and then Marty did the game. But sure, he made players mad. And players came up to me, Marty said, I said, well, say something to him. If you don't like it, say something. He's in the clubhouse every day. Marty came in that clubhouse every day. He never shied away from the clubhouse. He stood up to everything he said. If you had a problem with Marty, go up to Marty and tell him. Don't tell me. I mean, what am I going to do? If you have a problem with him, talk to him about it. And it's funny, when Marty did retire, I sent him a text and said, Marty, you're great. I said, the game's going to miss you. But I just don't understand how you didn't get kicked by somebody. he liked that. Marty liked that. But
he told me about that one time about that. Yeah, yeah. He loved that text.
Yeah, he was up there. He didn't care. Hey, come over and talk to me about
it. Well, that's the one thing. He would show his face every day in the clubhouse.
Exactly. And, like, Marty had his opinions too, just like everybody else. And if you don't like it, go talk to him about it. Don't go kick his ass. I was kidding about that. But let him know. Don't tell me.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? Hey, Marty, you hurt this guy's feelings. Well, it's the big leagues. It's baseball. And I got to tell you about Joe. Joe, my favorite person, player, whatever, in baseball was Joe Nuxall. They don't, and all I'm going to say is they don't come any better than Joe.
No.
He's my very favorite person in baseball.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot. I learned a lot from Joe after the games. We, you know, back then we used to sit down after games and have a couple beers after game and talk about the games and talk about other things. And I remember sitting in there with Joe an hour, hour and a half after the game and just listening to his stories and talking baseball and things. What a great, great man. There will never be another Joe Nuxall. He's missed every day, I'll tell you, as far as baseball goes. And,
oh, no doubt. I mean, that the stadium is 100 Joe Nuxall away, and it's very mm-hmm. deserving because you want to talk about a representation of a man, of a person, of a player, like Joe, of a like broadcaster, Joe, right. of Cincinnati, Joe Nuxall.
If you didn't like Joe Nuxall, you don't like people. I mean, yeah. That's as good as it, as easy as it gets.
Yeah, and I love the stories that he used to do the Star of the Game on radio. And for those who don't know, the younger listeners are listening right now, Joe would interview, like I do, much like on the TV side, but Joe would do mm-hmm. it on radio, the Star of the Game, and he would go down and do it in the dugout. But he, for certain players, and maybe it was all of them, I don't know, he'd be waiting with two beers.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
I mean, I was born in the wrong era. I would love to crack open a beer on the post-game TV interview. Just, you know.
That was so great. Like we were talking about, you know, growing up or coming up when I did in the era, you know, we sat around and talked baseball. I don't, and I'm not faulting the players or anybody else for this because
yeah, things change.
I know when I coached, they wanted us out of the clubhouse like a half hour after, you know, after the game's over. Well, you know, that's another story about Joe. We're in there talking and coaching, we're in there talking, having a few beers and things. And all of a sudden, we go out to get our cars, and they had that's when they had the cages up, and this is a riverfront, and we were locked in. They chained the fence, and we couldn't get our cars out. Jeez. Well, it just so happened, I had a bolt cutter in my truck. I drove a truck, and I had a toolbox, and I said, Joe, I'll get us out of here. I took the bolt cutters and cut the lock off, and Joe and me left. But we were in there about an hour. You know, we were only in there an hour after the game, and they already had the gates locked.
Oh yeah, they're racing out of there now.
I'm not blaming the players. You know, the players, you know, everything's different. Everything changes. If it's sort of good, I'm all for it. Well, I'll tell you one thing. You're fun to listen to. You're fun to watch and listen to. You have a good time. It seems like what you're doing, and that's what it's all about.
Well, I appreciate that, especially coming from you. And was that a politically correct answer?
Yes, it was. And you know what? And coming from me, you know me well enough that if I didn't really believe that, I wouldn't say it.
I know. That's why I'm actually a little I'm blushing a little bit, actually.
And that's where I've changed a little bit as far as the political correctness. If I don't believe something, I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah. Well, wow.
If I don't agree or this or that, I'm going to walk away from the situation. I'm not going to push it. Away.
Well, we all need to grow up at some point, you know, and I'm still I'll get there.
I'm still getting there.
Hey, it's thank you for the compliment. That means the world to me. It really does. Like you said, especially coming from you and
Marty broke you in. Well,
oh, he's still breaking me in. He retired, but he didn't retire from texting or harassing phone calls.
How bad
it's like, I'll answer the phone, and it's that line. I don't know if he used to lay this on anyone else or you heard it, but he'd say, he would say that, but he would say, let me ask you something. And I'd be like, oh, hold on, let me sit down. Oh, God, and what I do now. Let me ask you something.
Oh, yeah, I could hear him saying that. Yes. He's something else, I think.
Oh, he says, oh, I don't watch the games. Well, I'll get text mid-games. What'd you just say? Are you stupid?
No, not Marty. He wouldn't say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, it's great. He's great. I truly treasure it. And I treasure conversations like this. And man, it was a proud day when I saw you go into the Reds Hall of Fame. And I'm just glad that you're happy with your grandkids and your kids. And it sounds like you have a simple life now, which is great. And I'm just happy for you, Ron. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing some stories.
Well, I appreciate that, Jim. And thank you. like I say, I got it made. I'm one of the luckiest guys in the world with the grandkids and everybody, you know, and knock on wood, but you know, I'm so fortunate. Everyone's healthy. And you look in the world and it makes you look and say, hey, you know, I got pretty damn good. You know, look at some of the, look at their problem or look at this problem. You know, just it makes you realize how good you have it.
That's great to hear, man. Hopefully one day we can sit out on a deck somewhere and share a cigar and share some more stories. I would treasure that as well.
That sounds great. You got my number.
I do indeed. And I, you know what, just even have a number like guys like you were in the clubhouse of the Big Red Machine. I grew up loving you guys and I love the Cincinnati Reds. I bleed Cincinnati Red, even though I didn't play on the team. And I'm just tickled to death. And it's not lost on me that I'm able to have conversations like this and have friendships like this. I really appreciate it. So,
all right. Well, thank you, Jim.
All right, that is Ron Oster, and he just toughened up this podcast, add a little grit to this podcast, which I enjoy. Thank you very much for checking us out, everyone, and we will see you next time. So long.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.